Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and today our inquiry is, what's the difference between acceptance and resignation? But I actually want to go ahead and change that to say, what's the difference between acceptance and what Byron Katie calls fighting reality? We can talk about this difference in the context of our relationships with others, our relationship to ourselves, and our work in the world, a world that is in crisis. So this morning, this is not a crisis, but I'll tell you this story anyway. Several months ago, my partner and I moved into this really great house in Tacoma, and it's absolutely eastward facing. So I decided that on January 1st, I would start something called my Sunrise Project. And it means that every morning I get up by a little bit before sunrise, turn on the coffee maker, that is essential, and then I take a picture of the sunrise. Now, of course, remember, I live in the Pacific Northwest, so the sun isn't always actually visible or even coming up a little bit. And because I time this exactly to what they say sunrise is, you know, on those charts and everything. So actually, almost never see the sun, but it's back there. And that's kind of part of the point of the project is to say, I know it's there, even though I don't always see it. But this morning, you know, sometimes in January, this was a very easy project to put into practice because sunrise, it was, I'm not going to say about, it was exactly 7:35 on January 1st. And today it was at 5:16. When it was late, by the time I got up to take the picture, even though I'm an early riser, my partner was long gone. She'd gone to the gym. Sometimes she was even back from the gym initially by the time I took the photograph. But now, of course, the gym is closed. And so she's still in bed when I get up. And this morning I get up and I went to the front door and I looked down and there were four pairs of shoes just sitting there, not blocking the doorway. It's not like I tripped them over them or anything, but just really just four pairs of, okay, her shoes. And this is the kind of thing, a small thing, a trivial thing that used to really get under my skin. And I would and chances are you live with, if you live with another person or even a pet, that person or that pet has habits, practices that get under your skin. And so we might ask, so what's a mindful person to do? Well, on my mindfulness journey, I want to accept my partner for who she is and accept the reality that she has a tendency to leave shoes in all different places in the house, not just in front of the front door. But my habit of mind for a long time is to fight reality. And that took one of two forms. Initially, it was to try to convince her to stop leaving her shoes all over the house. And by fighting reality, that meant judging her, criticizing her, kind of generally huffing and puffing about it when it happened. And it never worked. So I had an alternative, which was resignation, right? Modeling the martyrs I've seen in my life over the years. I stopped complaining to her, but not about her, right? In my own mind, I was having an inner dialogue that focused on how her habit was the cause of my suffering, how my access to happiness was impeded by her and her shoes. Active or passive, I maintained the belief that my happiness was being undermined every time I found a pair of shoes someplace other than where I believe shoes ought to reside. Fighting reality is one aspect of those habits of mind we've been talking about. And acceptance is one of those mindfulness and Buddhist precepts that sound simple, but are a significant challenge. But before we dive deeper into this challenging topic, let's breathe. We breathe so we can feel calm, focus our mind, and enhance clarity. And let's remember to pause at the top of the breath when in the inhale, and then make the exhalation slightly longer than the inhale. As you take the first breath, just notice the sensation of the air entering and exiting your body. Second breath, try try to notice any place in your body where there's tension and relax. And then for the third breath, set your intention for this moment. What do you need right now? So here we go. Breath one, just notice your breath. Breath two, relax. And breath three, set your intention. Thanks for doing that with me. Acceptance, resignation, and fighting reality. Let's go. So I used to teach at a small college in Minnesota. And at one point I had a student named Daniel who was really a joy to have in class. He was funny, he was smart, he was creative. He was also my academic advisee, which meant that at midterm I reviewed his grades and we talked about any issues, but he was a really good student. So these were easy conversations. And we usually talked about more things like what classes he was going to take the next term, what his summer plans were, what he was going to do for the January term. Again, easy conversations until his senior year. Daniel was enrolled in the required public speaking class. This was required for all the communication studies majors, and most students took it as either first or second year students, but Daniel put it off until the spring of his senior year. And then he came in for his advising appointment, and I said to him, "I'm really surprised that you are failing public speaking." And he grinned at me and he said, "Oh, Mary Angela, I never let grades get in the way of my education." I told him I thought that was a really noble attitude, but that he still needed a passing grade in the course if he wanted to graduate on time. I was not as an undergraduate or an A student myself, so I had some appreciation for Daniel's perspective. But something I noticed as a faculty member was that it was often hard for my colleagues to accept that their students were not all seeking to be A students. And that makes a certain amount of sense because I'll bet the vast majority of college professors were A students. Early in a teaching career, I think most faculty assume that students are like them and thus are eager to learn a lot and get high grades. When they come up against the reality that not all students share their motivation, their skills, their interests, they can find it hard to understand and relate to the student's perspective. And eventually, this may lead a professor to develop a richer, much more inclusive view of what it means to teach. But it can just as easily lead to a really polarized view of students. You know, there are the ones who share my values and the ones who don't. And conversations among faculty can often be rife with views that are dismissive, disregarding, and even show a dislike for students who seem not to share their view of teaching and learning and grades. And if you ask them, they'd probably admit that they tend to think those students both all, you know, dismiss, disregard, and dislike them. Now, I felt the same way about different kinds of students. But students who, from my perspective, were too motivated by grades. I realized that I sometimes dismissed or disregarded and occasionally even disliked a student who had an A- but wanted to come in and argue for the A. I just didn't understand why anybody had that really deep commitment to those two extra points. And you can even hear it in my voice now, kind of mocking them. So I think that this experience my colleagues and I had, even from different perspectives, is an illustration of something most of us encounter in our daily lives. We tend to assume and operate as if other people see the world the same way we do. And when we come up against the reality which suggests that they don't, it can be a struggle to react with kindness and compassion, and we fight the reality of those differences. Now, you might want to stop me right here and disagree. You might want to say, no, I see the diversity of human experience, and I know that not everyone is like me, and I think that's just fine. And I'll bet in your conscious mind that's true. I know it's true in my conscious mind. But our goal is to gain a deeper awareness and understanding of the beliefs we have about the way the world ought to work. And these beliefs often lay beneath the surface of our conscious awareness. That's why we're working through these podcasts to become students of our own mind. Today, we're talking about what it means to accept reality as it is and the difference between that acceptance or resigning ourselves to live in a world we don't like or being in a constant state of battle with reality. In these first five episodes of Nothing But Now, we've been exploring the basic foundations of mindful living. If mindfulness is the practice of bringing our full awareness to the present moment without judgment, then it's helpful to notice what gets in our way of doing that. The primary obstacles are habits of mind or patterns of thinking that keep us trapped. And some of those habits include replaying scenes from the past or imagining scenes from the future, generally mentally being someplace other than the present moment. And often those images of past or possible futures are, in a sense, narrated by an internal voice that we've talked about as the dictator. And it's a hypercritical voice that's constantly berating us or others in a constant state of judgment, extremely fearful, constantly doubting our ability to manage our life. And we've talked about mindfulness as a way to bring our awareness to those voices, to understand that our essential self is not represented by those voices, but by the consciousness that is witnessing, observing, hearing those voices. As we practice mindfulness, we begin to notice not only our habits of mind, the places our mind typically wanders to, we also begin to notice that what's happening in our mind is actually a full body experience. When we play out unhappy scenes from the past or ones we anticipate experiencing in the future, we feel the physical sensations associated with those feelings. What happens in our minds has a powerful impact on our whole system. Our thoughts, our physical feelings, our spirit, our relationship with others are influenced by what's happening there. Now, maybe I have a particularly vivid imagination, but it reminds me of something that often happens to me when I'm reading a novel. I've had this happen all my life. I can be reading while I'm on a bus or laying on the couch or sitting in a school library. And when I put the book down, whatever's happening in the novel is still happening in my mind. Whatever feelings the characters are wrestling with, I'm wrestling with them too. If they're angry, I'm angry. If they're heartbroken, I'm heartbroken. I can put the book down, walk into the kitchen to make a snack and realize I am mad at the world. And I think, why? And it can take me a couple of minutes to realize I'm still in the novel. And I've become so completely drawn in that I'm feeling their feelings. So if words on a page can have that much impact on what's happening in my mind and body, and just imagine what my actual feelings and thoughts can do. I can be transported far away from the present by them. I can be taken somewhere far beyond the present, or it might be the case that I'm so uncomfortable with my feelings that I stuff them down and look for ways to distract myself, ways that are often not in my best interest. They're not authentic and they don't work for long, but it's better sometimes than feeling what I'm feeling. So we're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to turn from this discussion of mindfulness practices to the more specific challenge of acceptance and the limiting beliefs that also are in the way of achieving acceptance. So we'll be right back, and thank you for joining me on Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
To Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the Golden Age, and it provided the truth and the answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net.
What would you do with the power of community? How do you create your own rituals? Tune into Living Your Gifts with me, Susan Huff, Ancient Applications for Modern Times, the second Wednesday of each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Our lives begin with the stories we are told and the stories we tell ourselves. Storytelling is the key. To learn more about me, visit LivingYourGifts.com. That's LivingYourGifts.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Ober. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Ober. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyober.com. That's drkathyober.com.
TheAngelLady.net.
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 TheAngelLady.net. 1-800-323-1790. 1-800-323-1790. Sue Storm.
Sue Storm.
TheAngelLady.net.
TheAngelLady.net.
Coming to you live on TransformationTalkRadio.com is The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and what she calls reality resistance. Join the cultural revolution and annihilate obstacles. Check it out at culturalbrilliance.com.
This is Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. And our conversation today is about the idea of acceptance and what it means to accept and not fight reality, and to accept in what I might call an authentic or genuine way, which is instead of stopping fighting, but just being filling your mind with judgments about another person's behavior, of truly being accepting. So we've been talking about what it means to become a student of our own mind. We've talked before, particularly in the first episode, about practices we can use to quiet our mind, where we can gently return our thoughts to the present moment so that we can allow ourselves to notice our habits or the mind, the places our mind typically goes. And doing this allows us to become aware of what Martha Beck calls limiting beliefs, or the closely held beliefs about how the world ought to work. And those beliefs really shape our life. These tend to be the source of our suffering and unhappiness, because when we're holding on to a limiting belief, chances are we are fighting with reality. We're saying the world is not operating the way I believe it should operate, and in order for me to be happy, it must change. I always think about a story my mom told when she lived in an assisted living apartment towards the end of her life. And in the summer, she would often sit out on there was a front patio, but it was also the entrance to the building. And she would sit out there with her friend Olive. This was in Indianapolis, which is really warm and humid in the summer. My mother told me that people coming in the building would usually stop to chat and inevitably would say some version of, geez, this weather's so terrible. It's just so hot. And every time Olive would snap, well, it's summer, isn't it? Olive was not fighting reality. But most of us can probably think of all manner of ways that we are fighting reality in addition to the typical complaints about the weather. You know, we fret about family members whose lives we think would be so much better if only they would change this, that, or the other thing about the way they function in the world. Our lives at work would be greatly improved, and certainly the business itself would be much more successful if only these things could change about the way things operate. Our trips to the grocery store, our walks in the park, our vacations would be so much better, if only. We have a habit, many of us, of looking at nearly any situation around us and noticing, above all, that it's not quite right as it is, that it could be improved if only. And that's fighting reality. Today we're talking about this very difficult space, this space where we say, yes, I want to notice where my mind goes. I want to become aware of the negative and fearful thoughts that are dominating me and causing my suffering. And I want to challenge myself to stop fighting with reality. But I also want to change. I want others to change, and I want the world to change. So let's talk a little bit more about acceptance. Why is acceptance an important practice in mindfulness? And it goes back to the second half of the definition, bringing our attention to the present moment without judgment. When I do that, when I'm fully present to what's happening around me, and I'm not judging it, that's a state of acceptance. And I think there are a couple of really important kind of points to suggest here that disagreements or concerns I often have about acceptance or hear from clients when we talk about it. And one is, you know, is acceptance the same as agreement? If I accept reality, does that mean that I am okay with reality, that I think reality is just fine the way it is? And what I would say is that that's maybe not the best question. The question, the way I would like to think about it, and I think people are talking about it, is acceptance doesn't mean that I think it's good or bad. It means that I accept that it is as it is. So that then suggests, is acceptance passive? And I would say absolutely not. You know, Byron Katie, who talks a lot in a really wonderful book she wrote called Loving What Is, she talks about this idea of fighting reality. And she would say, you know, it's neither passive nor disempowering. She'd want to ask, you know, which perspective is more empowering? The one where I say, Laura should put her shoes away, or the one where I say, Laura's shoes are not my responsibility. Part of acceptance is allowing ourselves to understand things like boundaries, what is and what is not within the scope of our responsibilities to change. And so as we continue talking, we'll kind of refine this idea of acceptance in terms of myself, other people, and the world. And it's, of course, in contrast to this idea of resignation, because to me, resignation is saying, yep, it is what it is, and there's nothing I can do about it, so I should give up. I shouldn't even try. And in fact, I should probably withdraw. I should distract myself. I should lose track of this. And that, to me, is very passive, even though it can often be filled with judgment, right? I may stop actively fighting reality, but inside I am still very angry and unhappy with reality. And then there's active fighting against reality, which can be exhausting and ineffective, like when you're trying to get somebody to put their shoes away. So I want to talk now about what it takes to transform these limiting beliefs we might have about how the world ought to work. And one belief that it was very easy for me to challenge was the status quo of the norms we have in our culture about sex and gender. It's because of the way I was raised, because of my own identity, I was always pretty comfortable, I would say from maybe like junior high forward, of asking questions about why things were attributed to masculinity or femininity, why we made such sharp distinctions between what was okay for men versus women, why we made such sharp distinctions between and always talked about men and women or male and female as complete opposites, never recognizing a continuum or areas in between. That eventually became the research that I did for my dissertation. And it was a class I taught often when I was teaching full time, was about communication and gender. And part of the experience of teaching it was to be in a room with 20 or 25 young people who were in various places in their own life in terms of thinking about this. Some had what I would call very progressive ideas, and many had very conventional ideas because, you know, they're just products of their culture like the rest of us. And for many of them, this class was the first time that they'd ever read anything or listened to their peers or a faculty member really suggest that there is a very elaborate, very rigid structure in our culture that tries to continuously differentiate male from female, women from men, boys from girls, masculine from feminine, to put them on, to suggest that they are polar opposites, that you're all one or all the other, and to talk about anything in between, whether it's at the biological or social level, as somehow deviant. This was the first time they'd ever really had those kinds of ideas questioned. And it was hard for them to think about that sometimes. And for others, it was crazy liberating. they loved it. It was exactly what they needed to hear. As to be honest, it had been something that I really needed to hear, there was nothing wrong with the way I operated in the world. And we would often reach a point in the semester where a student in the class would say, I feel as if I have to rethink everything. that now there's nothing I can take for granted, that I have to question everything I've ever thought or believed about sex and gender. And my response always was to throw my hands in the air and shout hallelujah and say, my work here is done. Because that was more than anything I wanted them to believe. I wanted them to be questioning. I wanted them to ask themselves, is what I believe about what I have been taught and what I have coming to understand or coming to recognize as my deeply held beliefs about sex and gender, are they valid? Do they work for me? Is it the case that it's not true for everyone else? And therefore, I don't have to either limit myself or limit how I make sense of other people in the world by constantly reconstructing, reinforcing this very rigid structure of sex and gender that's built on a very, very fragile foundation. So I would like to turn to the present. As I've been preparing this podcast, our country has seen wide-scale protests against racism, specifically police violence, but also violence from ordinary citizens that is disproportionately directed at people of color, and particularly African Americans. And I find myself asking, is mindfulness really relevant to this historical moment? Now, what role can mindfulness practices play at this moment when people are putting their bodies in harm's way in cities throughout the country? Well, I think mindfulness practices have the potential to be very powerful at the level of transforming individual consciousness. When I was on the debate team in college, we would often argue that solutions to difficult cultural problems required attitude change along with changes in policy. And in a way, it was a weak argument because there's in a debate round, because there's no mechanism by which we can mandate change, attitude change, right? So how likely was it to happen? How reasonable was that as a so-called solution to a problem? So I'm not suggesting that changes in individual consciousness are any substitute for changes to laws and policies. But it's also the case that changing law and policy alone don't create the depth and breadth of change we clearly need to see in our society. How individuals think matters. And my work is about helping individuals become consciously aware of how their habits of mind, how they think, their limiting beliefs. And I think that racism is a limiting belief. And it's in this space of talking about acceptance that I think we can very productively examine how racism functions as a limiting belief at a level that may often be invisible to us. So we're going to take a break now. And when we come back, we're going to go deeper into this subject and talk about racism as something that is a limiting belief, a deep belief that many of us have, even though we tend to be in denial about it and not want to see that as true. And what happens when we fight the reality that we too have racist beliefs deep in our system. So you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Are you ready to transform your life and embrace magical experiences? Talking to Tanis with your host Tanis McRae is here to help you find your joy in life. Tune in live every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let's awaken your experience and create the change necessary to take back your right to choose who you are. For more about Tanis, visit TalkingToTanis.com.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Hi, this is Kimberly Carlson, and I would love for you to tune in to All In Healing Radio, where together we will begin to experience health, happiness, and harmony in all areas and aspects of life. Join us every first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. on TransformationTalkRadio.com. All In Healing will help you release layers of negative beliefs and energies for radiant health, deep joy, and greater abundance. Visit me at KimberlyCarlson.com.
Hey, how's it going? If it's stressful or just plain exhausting, New Light Living is here to ask, is this the way you want to live? Join me, your intuitive spiritual life coach and host, Erica Sullivan, every week on New Light Living. Discover the power of creative tools to start living every day as your ideal dream day. See your life in the new light. To learn more, visit newlightliving.com.
Have you ever wondered what your pets think about? Do you know what your pets are saying to you? Dr. Monica will be your pet's translator to help you understand what your pets are trying to communicate to you. Enhance the bond with your furry friends on Pets Talk with pet communicator Dr. Monica each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Dr. Monica, visit PetCommunicator.com.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Ober. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Ober. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyober.com. That's drkathyober.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and today we are talking about acceptance and the challenge of accepting reality for what it is, as it is, without fighting it. So we've just been talking about the challenge that my students face when they were met with ideas that were very different from the ones they had been raised with about things like sex and gender, or what women are like and what men are like, and the whole idea that there really are only these two categories of people called men and women. That was very challenging for many of them. And so we're now wanting to talk about that in the context of racism. And although I'm grateful to anyone who's listening, this segment is really directed at white listeners, because I want to take responsibility for speaking directly to people who, like me, are white. I hope everyone gains from my work, but I have a particular responsibility to address other white people. Obviously, there are many things we can do and should do to combat racism, and I encourage all of us to find as many ways as possible to do that. But my work is in the area of mindfulness, so that's where I'm focusing my attention today. And that's a place where I can speak to fellow white Americans and offer ideas that I hope will be both helpful and challenging. You know, unlike challenging sex and gender norms and stereotypes, this has not been easy for me, in part because as a white person, I can simply choose to ignore racism. So I want to start by talking about an experience I had last fall. I had the opportunity to take a mediation training course here in Tacoma, and this was an extremely well-run course. As a former teacher, I was deeply impressed with the way the whole thing was organized. And it was 5 days, 8 to 5. And one of the things I particularly was impressed with was how clear the two leaders of the workshop were. They were, they always explained not only what we were doing, but why we were doing it. And at a very detailed level, in terms of topics that they would address. And it included things like how we used time within the group. And we would started at 8, ended at 5, but we took a morning break, a lunch break, and an afternoon break. And they always, so the first day, they really spent a little, you know, energy and time talking about coming back from breaks in a timely manner, because we had so much material to cover, because we had guests coming in and out, because it was a complex process using role playing and switching groups and all that. So we take the first break, 10 minutes, I'm back on minute 9. Some people are back on minute 10, 11, 12, 13. And I'll be honest, I was kind of surprised that people were coming back 5 or 6 minutes late. Then we took the lunch break, and people came, and I, of course, you know, me, so I'm coming back right on time or 5 minutes early. Other people were right on time. Other people were 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes late. And now I was annoyed. I thought they were so clear with us. What are you doing? Why are you coming back so late? We took the afternoon break. same thing. A lot of us back on time, a lot of us back not so on time. Something I did not say, I realized. There were about 30 people in the training group, and it was an incredibly and delightfully diverse group in terms of age. The youngest participant was probably 23 or 24. The oldest, I think he was 78. There were Black people and white people and people of Asian descent and mixed race people. There were men and women and non-binary people. There were people from a lot of different professional backgrounds and were coming there for work reasons. And so a very, very diverse group. We get to the third break, the same thing happens. And who comes back late for the most part? The younger people, and many of them people of color. That's what I'm observing. So the first one I was surprised, the second one I was annoyed, the third one I'm noticing that the people who are organizing these sessions are not reacting to it. They're not cold to them. They're not making a big deal of it. They're not orienting to the latecomers at all, except in the most minimal ways to make sure that sort of they get their seats or, but really for the most part, they're not reacting to it at all. And that really caught my attention. Because I was reacting to it, right? I was inside. I was just spinning a little bit about, why are they late? Why are they late? They are so clear. We shouldn't be late. So the next morning, we get to the first break. And again, several people are late coming back. And now, you know, I was the example that the leaders of the workshop set for me in terms of not reacting to it and in fact, not fighting the reality that people were going to come back late, right? They were in an acceptance mode, it seemed to me. And it had a real impact on me. And what I noticed was that when it happened then the fourth time, I found myself asking questions like, huh, I wonder where they're going on their breaks. I wonder, isn't it, some of these folks are young, they probably have children. I'll bet they're going to talk about, check on their kids. I know from what people have said about their work lives, some people must be really, this must be very hard to be away from their office for 8 hours, for 5 days. And I started asking myself and noticing that I was asking myself questions that suggested there was a lot about these folks I didn't know and a lot I didn't know about what they were doing with their breaks. Not that it was any of my business, but in terms of letting go of the fighting that I was doing inside, the questions, in a sense, just naturally arose. The other thing I noticed, and we were together for 5 days, so it was kind of a long time and very intense, was that the work that we did, the role-playing in particular, was very intense. And I realized that my ability to be really present to them, because you had to have a kind of trusting relationship to either to function as a mediator, to, you know, not take things too personally, but to be really serious about the role playing. We all wanted to do well. It's very challenging material, very challenging interpersonal dynamics to engage in, even as a practice level. And I would not have been able to do that well if I had been in that place of judgment the whole time, if I had not been able to relax this limiting belief I had about how people ought to manage time. And I think that the other thing that's really evident in this story is that that this was connected to racism, right? That beliefs about how time ought to be managed are very culturally bound. And we judge people and we reinforce judgments that we might have about people of color when we are super uptight about how to manage time. And of course, there are limits to that in certain ways, emergencies, that sort of thing. But the average daily thing, I mean, it's no worse really than my partner leaving her shoes in front of the door. And it's no more my business or responsibility than her leaving her shoes in front of the door. So that's what my experience that I want to kind of work from. So this idea of racism as a limiting belief. A limiting belief is, you know, our belief about how the world ought to work, and our suffering comes from fighting against the reality of how the world actually works. So for me, becoming a student of my own mind means I can bring to conscious awareness the roots of my racism. And that's important because if I'm not aware of it, then I'm at risk of behaving in ways that are racist. I'm at risk of being in denial about that. And I'm at risk of claiming that my intentions, which I'll swear are not racist, are more important than my actions. And it might mean that that racism is a taken for granted assumption about how the world ought to work that doesn't get activated. Like, I'm not even aware that it's there until it's too late. and not too late probably for me, but for someone else, probably a person of color. Like many white people in America, I was taught both to be a racist and to reject racism. I was taught to respect the accomplishments of the civil rights movement, to admire and revere Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., to look at whites who came on the news spouting racist beliefs, to look at them with disdain and contempt. But I was raised by a generation who were taught that racism is okay, explicitly taught that white people are better than black people and how the world ought to work. I was also taught to be distrusting of black men. I was taught to be cautious around them. And I was taught racism through humor, right? This is back in a time when people made racist and sexist and homophobic jokes without much consciousness of it, or any, at least white people, straight people, men, and in my family's case, women, made those kind of jokes without feeling bad about it, I don't think. And I also learned the language of racism. It was racist language was used in my family. So even though I've been fortunate not to be a person who uses that language or makes those kind of jokes, I still feel deep inside that I am infected by them, right? So for me, this deep dive into my thoughts is noticing so that I can uncover, name, and transform beliefs, deeply held beliefs about the way the world ought to work, and beliefs that may in part rest on beliefs about the superiority of one race over another. It may not always be conscious. It may rarely be conscious. It may be typically a fleeting thought and an action that feels more like an instinct than a choice. And those actions that feel more like an instinct than a choice are very dangerous. Again, probably not for me, but probably for people of color. Beyond how I was raised, I want to examine how I fill my imagination, right? Our imagination, I talked about how I can get drawn into a book. Think of how we fill our imaginations in our daily life with things that we watch on television, both fictional and nonfiction program. Here's the Pew Research Center does lots of different polling, and one of the recent polls shows that most Americans think that the crime rate is going up, but it's not. It's actually been going down and down and down and down and down. Why do we think it's going up? Well, think about how crime-ridden our entertainment is. Right? Mayhem all over the place. That's how we are filling our imagination. What images do I consume? When I think about the protests, one of the central criticisms of the media response to the protests has been that the media, visual media, tends to focus on fires, things getting broken, clashes, right? Confrontations. And of course, that's on a very basic level, even if before you get to the racism of it, it's just a more visually compelling thing to look at than thousands of people sitting quietly in a park protesting, right? Or walking quietly down a street. But we're making choices as consumers, and it isn't until people have started to complain about the media coverage that we're finally seeing all of the peaceful protests, right? So how we fill our imagination really shapes our perception of the world. And I think that's another place where we have to be really careful as white people to think about what taken for granted assumptions get embedded in our consciousness when our imagination is filled with particular kinds of imagery and when it excises or ignores or leaves out other kinds of imagery. If you think about the story we're told of history, it's really a partial story, isn't it? And the only thing I can do is keep reading, keep learning to get the whole story, to get the story from more than one perspective. And of course, this kind of reflection is uncomfortable. It's deeply uncomfortable to notice these beliefs that we have. And one thing that's miserable about it and uncomfortable is that to say that I have deeply held racist beliefs that I'm still working on is to say something bad about me. It says something bad about my family, maybe the city I grew up in, any number of entities to whom I might feel loyalty. And so in that resisting reality, I might either fight it and say, nope, it's not true. I'm not like that. I'm colorblind. I don't see color. All the while, clutching my bag and crossing the street and making inaccurate assumptions. Or I deny other people's reality, right? It's people are oversensitive, things aren't that bad, the world has really changed, right? And I have good intentions, and I would never use that word, right? So it's challenging to not shut down in the face of these conversations. And we might ask, should I really be engaged in this self-reflection without judgment? Shouldn't I be condemning myself when I see deeply held beliefs that say I'm better than people of other races? I mean, what's the value of doing this self-reflection without judgment? This is a hard question, but it's an important one. And it's, on the one hand, there is going to be judgment because I'm just human. So I am going to be uncomfortable. But I want to learn how to sit with that discomfort and not push it away, nor be so carried away by it that I sort of dissolve in an emotional puddle and I don't do anything constructive with it. I want to work on addressing my own limitations with kindness and compassion so that I can act from a place of good judgment where I can, I'm not paralyzed by the negative feelings, right? We sometimes have to sit with the discomfort. We have to ask ourselves questions about it. Where does it come from? And not only when I feel or when I notice a kind of racist perspective rising up in me, but also when I then explore that and say, oh, I'm very uncomfortable with that, right? Because otherwise, I think we do become paralyzed. And as I think people have been telling us, people of color have been telling white people, our guilt is not helpful, right? Accepting our limitations for our bad education can sometimes feel like a reason to give up, but acceptance can mean acknowledging our limitations, feeling the sadness, the sorrow that those beliefs exist in us, and then moving on, not into a fantasy world, but into a world of action characterized by compassion and kindness. My guilt doesn't help anyone if it immobilizes me. So does this all sound hopelessly passive? You know, one of the things, though, that we hear from people of color is that too often white allies don't recognize their racism. So while action is vital, action without some soul searching, some clarity about how racism works within us can deeply undermine our ability to be allies. I think that's when we stop listening. That's when we expect to lead. That's when we center the conversation on our experience, when we suggest and communicate the belief underlying our allyness that there is still white superiority, that we know better, that we know what others need. You know, through this home education and formal education, we only learned part of the story. We learned views that, you know, rarely articulated, that inequality is treated as a natural outcome of inherent differences rather than that the races are, that it's socially engineered. You know, and as with sex and gender, I don't think of myself as the architect of the social structures in this culture. So it's hard for me to sometimes see the impact of my actions and to place them within that system. But none of us live outside the system. The question is, are we willing to sit with the discomfort that comes from recognizing these deeply held beliefs of white superiority, beliefs sometimes taught so subtly that we didn't even know we were learning them? So I was raised this way. Many of you were raised this way. So I give myself permission to notice the thoughts and feelings that may be the result of that infection. I give myself permission to sit with the discomfort of knowing that it's rooted in places that I also love, like my family. I don't have to indulge in feelings of guilt and self-recrimination. I don't have to be defensive. I don't have to shut down, and I can change. I won't claim to be woke, but I will claim to commit to being awake. So that's today's show. Thanks for being here. I hope you take 3 deep breaths after we go off the air. If you'd like to learn more about my work, you can go to MaguireLifeCoach.com. That's Maguire, M-A-G-U-I-R-E, LifeCoach.com. Or you can email me at MaryAngelaMaguire@gmail.com. I hope you'll join me next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 Eastern, when I don't know what question we're going to ask, but I know there are a lot of questions out there. So thanks for joining me. Until then, be well, and thanks for listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela Maguire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, MaguireLifeCoach.com. That's MaguireLifeCoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.